It's 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. The United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to adopt a new tough round of economic sanctions against North Korea in response to its September 3rd nuclear test of a possible hydrogen bomb. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke to the council Monday.
We don't take pleasure in further strengthening sanctions today. We are not looking for war. The North Korean regime has not yet passed the point of no return. If it agrees to stop its nuclear program, it can reclaim its future. If it proves it can live in peace, the world will live in peace with it. On the other hand, if North Korea continues its dangerous path, we will continue with further pressure. The choice is theirs. Thank you.
Haley said the provisions in the resolution would drastically cut North Korea's ability to fund and fuel its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. If fully implemented, the new sanctions would cut a third of North Korea's oil imports, which Haley called the lifeblood of its efforts to build and deliver a nuclear weapon. The resolution will also reduce by more than half the country's gas, diesel, and heavy fuel oil imports, while completely banning the import of natural gas and other oil substitutes. Residents of the Florida Keys may be unable to go home for weeks to see for themselves the havoc left by Hurricane Irma. The Keys were the first part of Florida slammed by the powerful hurricane Sunday morning. Irma's winds and storm surges swept over the island chain, wrecked roads and bridges, and also swept homes and cars aside. More at VOANews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Donald Trump said terrorists have nowhere to hide as he led the nation in observing the 16th anniversary of the worst act of terrorism ever on U.S. soil. He says we're making plain to these savage killers that there is no dark corner beyond our reach, no sanctuary beyond our grasp, and nowhere to hide anywhere on this very large earth. Mr. Trump told a gathering this at the Pentagon, where one of four hijacked jets hit on September 11, 2001. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis introduced Mr. Trump, noting the 9/11 attacks had only strengthened America's resolve. A foreign woman working for the International Committee of the Red Cross has been shot dead in northern Afghanistan. An ICRC spokesman told VOA the incident took place Monday at an orthopedic clinic. He identified the victim as 38-year-old physiotherapist Lorena Perez, a Spanish national. The shooter was said to be a regular patient and had hidden the pistol in his wheelchair. He said that the aid worker was quickly evacuated to a nearby NATO military hospital where she succumbed to her injuries. At least 16 people were killed, most of them regional government soldiers, after al-Shabaab militants attacked the Somali town Beled Hawa on Monday, according to officials. Security sources say militants attacked three locations in the town, which sits on the Somalia-Kenya border. The first attack targeted a military base about 6 kilometers outside the area. Independent security sources told VOA Somali that 14 government soldiers were killed in the attack. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a temporary order allowing the Trump administration to maintain its restrictive policy on refugees while the court considers challenges to the ban. Justice Anthony Kennedy issued the temporary order Monday. It was expected to remain in effect while the full court takes up the matter, likely within several days. The Trump administration made an emergency application to the Supreme Court, asking for a stay on an earlier ruling by an appeals court, which effectively reinstated a 120-day ban on entry to the United States by almost all refugees. The lower court also ruled last week that the refugees could enter the country if a U.S.-based resettlement agency agreed to accept their cases individually. Had the Supreme Court not acted, an appeals court decision lifting part of the ban on refugees would have gone into effect Tuesday. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September the 12th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. At least 16 people were killed after Al-Shabaab militants attacked the Somali town of Beled Hawo on Monday. And the international watchdog group Global Witness says Zimbabwe's government has been secretly using diamond exploitation to bankroll its military and spy agency.
These resources have unfortunately instead ended up in inside the security forces and institutions that have long been implicated in undermining Zimbabwe's democracy and serious human rights abuses.
Michael Gibb is a researcher with the organization Global Witness, and the chairman of Sierra Leone's National Electoral Commission says his organization plans to implement measures to ensure that next year's elections are free, fair, and transparent.
Our election for the president, members of parliament, and local council are slated for 7th of March 2018. We, as the National Electoral Commission, are convinced that we'll conduct the election and that we will conduct free,
Mohamed Mfali Conte is the chairman of the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission, and the United Nations Security Council unanimously stepped up sanctions against North Korea over the country's sixth and most powerful nuclear test carried out on September the 3rd. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. In Somalia, at least 16 people were killed after Al-Shabaab militants attacked the Somali town of Beled Hawo on Monday. Many of those killed were regional government soldiers. Four other people were killed in incidents elsewhere in the country. Security sources told VOA that militants attacked three locations in Beled Hawo, which sits on the Somali-Kenya border. Independent security sources told VOA Somali Service that 14 government soldiers were killed in the attack, with 8 others wounded. The international watchdog group Global Witness says the Zimbabwe government has been secretly using diamond exploitation to bankroll its military and spy agency, both of which have been accused of human rights abuses in support of President Robert Mugabe. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare for VOA.
Global Witness says powerful political elites and security forces have controlled and secretly exploited Zimbabwe's diamond sector for a decade. Zimbabwe's dreaded Central Intelligence Organization and the military are among the state actors accused of holding stakes in private diamond enterprises, trading the country's precious stones on the international market. Global Witness says it examined the workings of 5 of the major diamond companies in Zimbabwe and found they have actively worked to conceal their finances and beneficiaries. VOA spoke to Global Witness researcher Michael Gibb.
Lots and lots of the diamond revenues have clearly not ended up in the national budget. And second, through the fact that these resources have unfortunately instead ended up in inside the security forces and institutions that have long been implicated in undermining Zimbabwe's democracy and serious human rights abuses.
Government officials declined to comment when reached by VOA. Junior Mining Minister Fred Moyo said he could not comment on what he called the historical part of Zimbabwe's diamond mining. Zimbabwe discovered the diamond mining fields in 2006 in the eastern part of the country, Marange, and began mining operations 3 years later. Meanwhile, the country's economy has declined with the currently no national currency, a severe cash shortage, and the government struggling to pay civil servants. President Robert Mugabe announced in March of last year that he was bringing the diamond industry under state control. The president blamed $13 billion in missing diamond revenue on private companies he accused of robbing the nation. Global Witness said it is a, quote, myth, unquote, to blame losses solely on private sectors.
The Morangi discovery was met with such hope and the expectation, frankly, that would help the country chart a new economic course away from an increasingly difficult economic situation. It's clear that hope has been dashed. Reforms should focus less on how many companies are active in Morangi, whether it's 1 or 5 or 10. The people of Zimbabwe deserve to know how much money the companies are making from their diamonds and where that money is going and how it's being spent.
Spokesman Obed Gutu of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, welcomed the Global Witness report.
If those diamonds had been properly accounted for, the eastern border city of Mutare would be the Las Vegas of Zimbabwe. But you go to Mutare today, it looks like a ghost town, just like another town city in Zimbabwe. Derelict infrastructure. But you then ask yourself, where's all the money gone? Obviously, the money has been externalized, and a few people have benefited at the expense of the nation of Zimbabwe.
Mugabe's nationalization of the diamond sector has not gone unchallenged. Court cases by the private companies ordered to stop work in March 2016 are ongoing. Global Witness says the diamond sector, under the control of the new government-backed mining company, remains shrouded in secrecy. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The chairman of the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission says his organization plans to implement measures to ensure the March 7 elections next year are free, fair, transparent, and credible. Mohamed Mfali Konte says the electoral body is working on the second phase of the compilation of the voter list to be used for the elections. He adds that despite the challenges, the Electoral Commission is making efforts to resolve concerns of political parties and other stakeholders about the voter list. This after political parties expressed worry about the disappearance of data, which they said could disenfranchise over 30,000 prospective voters in the elections. But while admitting the incident, the electoral body maintained that it has the capability of rectifying the error it blames on faulty machines and computer chips. Mohamed Mfali Konte, the chairman of the Electoral Commission, tells VOA's Peter Cloti that he wants to assure Sierra Leoneans that the electoral body would ensure that all eligible voters are able to cast their ballots during next year's polls.
Our elections for the president, members of parliament and local council are slated for the 7th of March 2018. We, as the National Electoral Commission, are convinced that we'll conduct the elections and that they will conduct free, fair, transparent, and credible elections. For preparation, we now have a total of 132 constituencies and over 400 wards. They have now gone through parliament. They are now law. We also done the voter registration, vote process itself. We are now in the process of actually finalizing the register itself of over 3.1 million people in readiness for the election.
With the compilation of this voter register that will be used for the elections, what should prospective Sierra Leonean voters expect from the process? Because you are compiling it, how credible and transparent will it be? And have you addressed the concerns of political parties as well as stakeholders in the compilation of this register?
Oh, yes. Of course, for political parties to meet on a fortnightly basis, we have what we call a political parties liaison committee. Representatives of political parties will meet every 2 weeks. They will also have a meeting of civil society organizations who also meet every 2 weeks on Wednesdays and Thursdays to brief them. Yes, there are concerns, but that is why we exhibited the register. For any election administrator, when you do voter register, you capture the details of people on the field. The law states that you print a provisional voter's register. We call it provisional because it's not final. The law says you exhibit the register. You've done the exhibition. And why do you exhibit the register? It's to get to see the problem so that at least one people whose names you are left out, you can see them. People whose names you are not corrected well, and also people can certify that their names are correct. So we did that. Of course there are problems, but those problems have been fixed. It's normal. These are normal problems in any emerging democracy. People are just making hue and cry. These are, as far as we are concerned, they are dictators. But we are set on conducting the election for 7th March. And we are working towards their credibility and their freeness and fairness.
Mohamed Mfaa Ali Conte is the chairman of the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. And from Sierra Leone, we go to Liberia, where citizens will vote on October 10th this year in presidential and legislative elections. About 20 candidates are vying to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who is concluding her second term. According to the World Bank, the country's economy is struggling to recover from the impact of the 2014-2015 Ebola crisis, and also because of a sharp decline in its main commodity prices, iron ore and rubber. Liberia's unemployment rate, especially among youth, is hovering around 75%. VOA's James Batty is on assignment in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. He visited the red light market, the largest in the city, to gauge the impact of the economy on ordinary Liberians and ask them what they expect from their next president.
My name is Matthew Zia.
So Matthew, what is your business here?
I'm business on copper seed.
What is that? What does that do?
You call it in the copper for the coat to not waste.
Now how much do you sell one of these?
I sell it $20.
20 US or 20 Liberian?
20 Liberty.
So 20 Liberty, that would be about how much United States money?
Less than a dollar.
Less than a dollar, yeah. For one of these.
Yeah.
Now they are going to have election next month. What do you want to say to the candidates who are running for president about your business and all that?
Yes, I pray to God that they will find a job that will be able to work.
Hello, what's your name?
My name is Musu.
What are you selling, Musu?
I'm selling lemon and bitter ball.
Okay, and what's that there also?
That lamb over there, ginger.
And that's what, ketele?
Ketele, yeah.
Okay, where do you get these things to sell them?
They can take it from Nima, Lofa, Bonkante.
Yeah. So there's election coming. Do you make enough money selling these things?
Nothing, we're not getting. But what we'll do now, hold the on the sun, under the room, suffering.
Yeah.
Nowhere for us to sell. We say not in a mud yet.
Musu, what you want to tell the candidates who want to be president?
Yeah, I tell them, say that they must do something good for all. They are coming, we'll be here, so they must able to pay market because some of all that market we're living on to support our children. So they must able to pay good market for us that we able to sell and support our children. And then they bring job for our husband and the wife because we not do the one who can't eat. Our children can't go to school. We're taking risks.
Yeah.
We are on the truck. Sometimes we're trying to tear and everyone else can run away.
Hello, what's your name?
My name is Koto.
Koto, what are you selling here?
I'm selling green.
Greens? What type of greens?
Water green. And potato green.
Now, are you making enough selling this green? Are you making enough money?
No, I'm suffering.
What do you mean you're suffering?
Today I bring a green, so nobody say how much. Because for the money, they two quality. The three money, what will you see here? They gave it all hard time.
What's your name?
My name is Benuti Aulen.
So, Bindu, what are you selling here?
I sell country chicken, buffa, and guinea fowl.
Where do you get the chickens from?
I buy it from the Bureau of Villages.
And how much do you think is one chicken?
I sell one for 350, 400.
350,
Liberian dollars.
That's
yes.
How much for United States?
United States, it will be like $3.50.
Oh, do you make enough money?
Yes. All depends on the market. If I make money during the season, but throughout the month, I can make money because for now we are 16. The market is too much. There's no business. Everybody now keeping our money for election and also for school.
Do you have children?
Yes.
So you are supporting them by selling chicken?
Yes.
Now, this election coming, what do you want to tell the candidates? What do you want to tell them?
For me, I'm Sarah again. I'm Benuti Olem, a young widow. So for me, I would like to tell the candidates that they will be able to help with the young widow and all those that have support, and they come around to help her.
VOA's James Batty is on assignment in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, where he visited the red light market. The market is the largest in the city. Activist Kemi Seba was arrested and expelled from Senegal last year after burning a West African CFA banknote at an anti-CFA protest. Seba is part of a movement calling for West and Central African countries to break away from their current euro-pegged currency and develop a new monetary system. Seba and others are planning protests all over West and Central Africa this Saturday to continue the calls for leaders to leave behind the current system. International development expert and a proponent of African countries leaving the CFA, René Lecq, talks to Ricky Shryok about how Seba's actions are igniting the cause.
Yeah, I do think that he, of course, did increase the attention about this whole issue of the CFA, which has been an issue for decades and decades. Personally, I've been advocating for the suppression of the CFA currency for over 30 years now. And so, of course, that gesture of Kemi Seba definitely brought some more light to that issue, even if personally I will not do something like that. But it's okay. It's on the right side of history for sure.
When you say it's on the right side of history, why? And what side of history is that?
It is a side of history of trying really to develop our continent, to develop the countries, the CFA countries. And because I'm one of those big believers that the CFA just cannot carry a policy for developing those countries. The CFA, because it's not a currency which is linked to the reality of the economy of those countries, just cannot be used as a tool, as an instrument for development. The argument people make is CFA help to stabilize importation. That's true. Definitely is the case. But you cannot develop any economy. And I don't know one example in the world in history of an economy will grow through importation. An economy, you have to be able to produce, you have to be able to create an internal market. And for that reason, I really think that the CFA, it's really a terrible thing for our countries.
What about those who say it also just helps the economy in general because it's pegged to the euro and therefore more stable if you look at a place like Guinea-Conakry, which does not have the CFA and has undergone quite a bit of inflation on its own banknotes?
The issues in Conakry, in other places, is not an issue about the currency. The issue is an issue of governance. So it doesn't matter if you have a currency, even if you use a euro itself or you use a US dollar, if you have bad governance in your country, your economy is not going to be doing well.
I was international development expert René Lecq. He was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Washington. The government of Malawi continues to face rampant theft of medical drugs in its public hospitals a year after the country and the US government launched a campaign aimed to curb the malpractice. The campaign came after government studies showed that 30% of medical drugs are stolen from the Central Medical Stores warehouse in the Lilongwe. Lamek Masina reports from the capital, Blantyre.
Malawi's public hospitals receive near all of their stock of life-saving malaria treatment drugs from the U.S. government and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria. But in the recent past, the drugs have been a target of massive theft in public hospitals. This forced the U.S. government, which donates most of the drugs through Global Fund, to threaten to stop providing the drugs to the country unless the stealings stopped. As part of the interventions to stop the drug pilferage, Malawi's government and the Global Fund launched a hotline in April last year which people use to report about incidents of drug theft in public hospitals. They also introduced cash rewards to people who provide information that will lead to conviction of the thieves who are stealing these malaria medications. But recent studies show that drug theft in Malawi public hospitals hasn't stopped. Reports from the Ministry of Health indicated that out of 17.6 billion Malawi kwacha, or $24 million, of annual drug budget for this year, about 1.5 billion Malawi kwacha, or $2 million, was lost through drug theft. A Global Fund report released in July has also revealed continued theft of drugs in Malawi's public hospitals. The report says this is largely because of lack of effective systems to account for the drugs at Malawi's public health facilities. Adrian Chikumbe is the spokesperson for the Minister of Health. He told VOA that some of the causes of the malpractice are beyond the ministry's control.
We still have got a few loopholes. One of them is that the penalties that people get from the court, where we have very little control over, are still lenient.
He says, for example, if one steals drugs worth thousands of US dollars, he's fined $10. About 125 people have been arrested in connection with the drugs since last year. 30 of them have been convicted, while 64 cases are in court. Medical staff are believed to be involved in the theft of the drugs, especially those who run and work in private clinics. The Global Fund report says 20% of private health workers in Malawi also work in the public health system. It says this would likely cause conflict of interest. Chikumbe agrees, but says this is just a lesser devil.
We have to choose a lesser devil, whereby we see this conflict of interest. But then at the same time, we have shortage of medical facilities in the country, and this is why not only those who are working, but also those that retire from the service, they are allowed to open a clinic.
Chikumbe says efforts to stop the theft are underway.
We have also installed tracking devices in the vehicles to delivery points, so we're able to track that why is this vehicle diverting to point C. It's supposed to move from point A to B.
George Jobe is the executive director for the Malawi Health Equity Network. He says there is need to overhaul all the drug procurement and storage system.
And at the same time, we also think that we need to have a stakeholders consultation meeting where people should share different ideas on how we should deal with the challenge.
Malawi Parliament is currently working on reviewing the Pharmacy, Medicines and Poisons Act, so it contains stiffer penalties on the culprits. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
And the United Nations Security Council unanimously adopted new sanctions against North Korea on Monday over the country's sixth and most powerful nuclear test carried out September 3rd. The sanctions impose a ban on the country's textile exports and capping imports of crude oil. It was the ninth sanctions resolution unanimously adopted by the 15-member council since 2006 over North Korea's ballistic missile and nuclear weapons. The United States watered down an initial tougher draft resolution in order to win the support of China and Russia. And that's it for this Tuesday, September the 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day, Africa.
Hello, I'm Lina Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at capacity building for the health workforce with Dr. Vanessa Carey, founder of Seed Global Health. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.